Microsoft's Azure and .NET Strategy with Scott Hunter.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. The podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. ClearMeasure is hiring architects and .NET engineers who'd like a path to become architects, so you can go to clearmeasure.com/careers for that. And if you have a comment or question for the show, send me an email at podcast@palermo.network. Also, my new online TV show has launched. You can search for Programming with Palermo in any of the podcast directories. And we have 10 episodes out there with 11 coming out in a few days. You can also find that on www.palermo.network as well. And the guest today on our show is a returning guest, a multi-time guest, last on the show on show number 152, Scott Hunter. He is the Vice President of Product for Azure Developer Experience. He builds all the tools, all the .NET tools for Azure, and he's led .NET for many years. If you've ever done the .NET Conf, then you're very familiar with him. But on show number 152, if you go back in the archives, he was giving an update on .NET 6 as it was just coming out. So, Scott, welcome back to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back. Excited to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Well, since we talked last, and I'll encourage the listeners to go into the archives and listen to your last episode, and maybe the last several, but Microsoft has been moving. There's been lots of great things happening at Microsoft, but why don't we start with the latest and some transition things that have happened that they've been announced, but they really haven't been amplified. So I'm sure a lot of listeners have not heard.
One of the things that a lot of listeners might not be aware of is a lot of us that worked on .NET, especially the ASP.NET team, have been both in developer division, which is the group that builds Visual Studio and GitHub now, TFS, Azure DevOps, all come from DevDiv. A bunch of us left DevDiv back in around 2010 or 2011, and we moved to Azure with Scott Guthrie. So Scott Guthrie was the moved out of developer division to Azure, and when he did, anything that was web-related went to Azure. And so we took ASP.NET, we took the web tools, and we lifted that stuff to Azure. And we spent about a six-year window over in Azure. And it was fun. That was where we booted up .NET Core. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what we now call .NET 6 was kind of born over in Azure. And it was born over there because, well, when we're in the cloud, suddenly Linux became a much bigger deal for us. Open source became a much bigger deal for us. And so while we're sitting here looking at, you know, ASP.NET, and trying to figure out the next steps for ASP.NET, well, we saw that containers were going to be important, that Linux was going to be important, that open source was going to be important. And that's what kind of led to us prototyping what we called at the time ASP.NET 5, which then became the beginnings of something called Project K. That was another code name for it, which eventually turned into .NET Core. Mm-hmm. And that's the modern .NET that we all live in, that we all use today. But you know, while we were in Azure, we also did other stuff. We were part of the group that built something called Azure App Service. That's a great service for hosting, especially any, you know, if you're coming from an IIS Windows background, it was a great way of taking applications that you might build on top of that, especially ASP.NET applications, and hosting them in Azure. We also built something called Azure Redis Cache. Once again, that was an open source thing again. Let's go take an open source product, Redis, and build a service around it in Azure. Because mm-hmm. why build a tech when there's great open source tech out there already? And so that was a project that we did over there. We brought a company called Epiphany, and that was an API management product, which became Azure API Management. And we built the SDKs for Azure. So if you were using .NET or Node or Python or Java, we were the ones building the SDKs in the early days of Azure for those techs. And then kind of my journey is, you know, that .NET Core thing really kind of started gaining momentum, and .NET was really based in developer division. And so Julia Lucen, who is the president of Developer Division, she and I talked in 2016, actually it was late 2015, early 2016. And I moved back into DevDiv, bringing some of that tech with me. I brought ASP.NET, MDD framework, the web tools, the Azure SDK, and it was an anomaly at the time, but Redis Cache came over with us as well. And then we spent the next couple of years building .NET Core 1, 2, 3, rebranded just to .NET with .NET 5 and shipped .NET 6. And oddly enough, all of that cloud tech last February moved into Developer Division. So it's kind of a weird story because a bunch of us left Developer Division. And so we're kind of like a dev div outside of dev div. Mm-hmm. We built a bunch of, you know, dev tools and stuff for Azure for many, many years. And some of us come back in 2016, and then the rest of us come back in 2021. And it's kind of amazing because to us, it's like we own the tools, we own the SDKs, and we own a bunch of the primary services that we as developers would want to use in Azure. Mm-hmm. And then last October, I was asked by Julia to take on some of that Azure work. And so I kind of moved away from the .NET stuff and took on App Service, Azure Functions, Azure Container Apps, those SDKs again, the developer tools for Azure, and that's Visual Studio Code, Visual Studio, Command Line. And we also have a ton of other developer services. There's a Config service, there's a Grafana service, there's Logic Apps. And so it's a mix of cloud tech. And so
that's a lot.
It's a lot. To me, it felt like kind of coming home in some ways because we were all part of the same org building all that tech, you know, before I left and came back into Developer Division in 2016. And so I'm happy it's all back together. And, you know, it's fun because now we're not just thinking of making something like .NET ready for the cloud native environment of, you know, containers and microservices. We're also building the services behind the scenes that enable you to host a cloud native application in Azure. And so, you know, I think the combo of being able to still be very tightly integrated with the .NET team and building these services allows us to provide, you know, a great experience for all developers, especially .NET developers for using the cloud in the future.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on the promotion. That is, as you're listening it out, that is a huge responsibility, just listing them all out, much less allocating your week or month to them.
It's been a fun transition. It's been interesting. As I said, I am still super close with the .NET team. We're in the same org and we talk all the time. In fact, I give that team crap all the time. Actually, I'm like, what's your cloud native story for .NET? How are we going to make .NET? You know, if I Google Java and cloud native, I get these results. Mm-hmm. What results do I get if I Google .NET and cloud native? And how do I make those results better? It's the same thing that we did with the reboot of .NET in the .NET Core era. We asked ourselves the same questions. If you Google .NET and performance or .NET and open source and .NET, and we went and, you know, worked on fixing and adjusting many of those things. And so this is just a culmination of that. And, you know, building great developer services for all developers, no matter what your languages are. But obviously, because, you know, we have the services and we have .NET, it gives us an opportunity to make that even a better integration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, congratulations. You've been a strong leader in .NET for so many years.
15, actually.
I think we might have met back in 08 or something like that when MVC was just kind of starting to be designed. And man, it's come a long way from there. You've done a ton along the way.
It's crazy, actually. We would have met in 08. It would have been during MVC 1.0, I'm going to guess. You know, once again, that was another transition. It's like, hey, we saw that some of the open source tech was going it with a different kind of web model, and we wanted to go build a model that matched to that. To me, the real culmination of it, though, you know, is, you know, we just celebrated earlier this year the 20th anniversary of .NET.
Yeah.
I look at that and I go, it's been an amazing journey. And think about this. .NET's 20 years old. That's old for a tech. Java's mm-hmm. a little bit older than .NET. Actually, might be quite a bit older than .NET. But we've been number one 3 years in a row and the Stack Overflow developer survey for the most loved framework. Mm-hmm. And to be the most loved framework 20 years after we first built the tech,
yeah,
you know, is amazing. And my favorite part of that whole journey was that reboot, mm-hmm. was learning from, you know, the shifts and the ebbs of the industry and how do we make .NET the right product for that next wave. That was our huge focus on performance. size on disk, removing all the parts of .NET that were kind of old and crumbly and didn't make any sense anymore. Mm-hmm. That's the thing I think Java still needs to go do, is go shed off some of the cruft that you build up over all those years. And yeah. And one of our goals with .NET is to make sure we don't ever kind of bloat it up like that ever again. It's like, if we make new stuff, don't feel compelled that we have to go put it in the actual framework, make it a side framework, mm-hmm. make it not actually part of the product. So if it has to peel off at some point, we can do that without feeling like we're, you know, making a mess. And so, but we learned so much over that era. And I'm so proud of the team over what we accomplished during those years. And there's more .NET developers and of course there should be. You would think over 20 years you'd have more today. Mm-hmm. But there were some dark moments, you know, back, you know, there were some identity issues where we weren't sure what .NET was anymore. And there was a period where we probably shed some users.
Well, don't forget that Microsoft got a new CEO. I mean, yeah, huge shifts in the way leadership thought. So big stuff.
Huge shifts. But, you know, it's growing at a great rate now. You know, I can't, you know, to be growing at the rate it grows 20 years in is just amazing. And so, you know, Stephen Tobe just did one of his crazy blog posts again for .NET 7. You know, I don't know how many pages it is, but, you know, all the pages of performance improvements. It's when you have blogs that are 100 pages of performance improvements, that just shows you mm-hmm. the culture change in the organization. That was kind of our mantra, was, you know, if we make it fast, that's a great reason to use the technology. And we've actually seen wins where we have customers that were not .NET people that actually went and evaluated all the languages, and we, you know, and picked us in some of these cases. And so I was talking to Glenn Condron on the team, and he was telling me about some of the customers that we can actually identify that have noticed the Tech Empower scores and have noticed the blog post and tried the techs themselves and chose us, not because we were their favorite tech, but because we were the fastest tech. And inside of Microsoft, we see the same thing, which is, you know, as some of the internal services in Azure, you know, migrate from .NET Framework to .NET 6, you know, they're seeing anything from 10 to 15 to 20 to 30, 35, 40% improvements, you know, which helps on the performance of the service and it helps on the cost of running the service.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, that's a huge shift. Thanks for giving us the rundown on the transition. With that, can you give us an update on what is Microsoft's strategy with Azure and what's the strategy with .NET? And is it any different?
I do think they're a little different. So let's talk about the area of Azure that I primarily work on. I work on an area of Azure that we would call platform as a service, PaaS. Mm-hmm. And so what does a PaaS do for you? You might, you know, let's educate the listeners. What platform as a service primarily means is, you know, back in the day, you and I, Jeffrey, we might have both hosted some code, and maybe we got a virtual machine, and inside of a virtual machine, let's date ourselves a little bit. We installed Windows in there. We have IIS on that thing.
Oh yeah.
We got .NET Framework. We're running MVC 1, 2, or 3. That virtual machine though doesn't take care of itself, meaning that, you know, the version of Windows inside of that thing is fixed. When there's a new version of Windows, I will either need to go update my virtual machine or make a new virtual machine. If there's a new version of .NET, I've got to go update that virtual machine again for the update of .NET. If there's a new version of IIS, it's lots of updates. And so that's what not using PaaS is. The idea behind platform as a service is, well, we're going to make our platform do those capabilities for you. So if you run your application in Azure Functions or Azure App Service, these are great hosting applications for .NET and other language apps as well. We maintain the core operating system for you. So when there's an update to the underlying operating system, it's our job to make sure that the entire service keeps that up to date. When there's a new version of .NET, it's our job to make sure that the new version of .NET's there. When there's a monthly patch to .NET, it's kind of our job to make sure that we patch those things. And so the idea here is, your job is primarily to focus on your app, and we'll focus on all the infrastructure behind the scenes for you. And that's the benefit you get. There's a few wobbles in that platform as a service thing, which is, you might not like it when we update you, because, like, you know, one day you're on some version of the operating system, the next day you're on another version, or maybe another version of .NET. You know, things can be fragile and break in some cases. And so that's the only challenge you have with the PaaS, is sometimes we can break stuff, but we're going to give you more control of that in the future. But, you know, the PaaS is way more than what I just described. I just talked about updating operating systems. If you have a website, and you just want to say, nobody but people in my organization can see the website, you don't have to go write the code in your app to do that. You can go to Azure App Service and check a box and say, only people in this AAD tenant can actually hit the website. And we do all the rest for you. If you want to run two versions of the application at the same time, it's like, hey, I've got a new version. I don't feel 100% confident in it. Well, we have a feature called slots, and you can actually, you know, have more than one version hosted at the same time. And you can mm-hmm. say, I want 10% of the traffic to go to the new one. So the platform as a service brings a bunch of tech with it and a bunch of capabilities. So you're not just getting, you know, the OS patches and stuff like that. We're actually giving you a ton of extra capabilities on top of the platform. And that's why we think it's an added value. It's like you coding those things, you can make mistakes, you could screw them up. You know, it's got logging built into it. It's got support for HPS, domains, all that kind of stuff. There's a whole, you know, pile of features mm-hmm. sitting on top of that. And so that's kind of the area that I focus on is the platform as a service. And as we look at the cloud world today, there's been this huge change that's kind of rippled about. And we talked in .NET, we talked about this a lot for the last couple of years, you know, containers. Mm-hmm. We see containers as being the new way that you deploy an application. And, you know, if you're new to containers and you're listening, the idea behind a container is we just talked about virtual machines. Well, making a virtual machine is kind of expensive. I have to go and put an operating system, you know, into the virtual machine. Well, operating systems are not super small. Mm-hmm. You know, in the case of Windows, it could be a couple of gigs. Even in the case of some of the Linuxes, it could be, you know, a couple hundred megs or a gig. And then you go put your runtimes on top of that. You put all this stuff together. You end up with some huge file, which then you kind of spread around to all of your hosting images. With containers, instead of doing that, you just write a file. It's called a Docker file. And you tell it, I want this base OS. And that base, you might actually tell us an image that contains a runtime or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a layering approach. Instead of having this huge file, you write this small file that kind of describes the layers that you want in your application. And then the tech knows how to deploy that for you. And so you're not carrying that huge mega footprint that you're passing all around. And so it's slowly been taking over and becoming the way that we deploy in the cloud. And then there's another big word, Kubernetes, mm-hmm. that you probably hear a lot of. The reason you hear lots about Kubernetes is kind of like a full pile of infrastructure for running and maintaining containers for you. And people love Kubernetes because it's not owned by anybody, meaning that it's not a Google thing or a Microsoft thing or an Amazon thing. Mm-hmm. It works everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, you can run Kubernetes in Azure. You can run Kubernetes on-premise. You can run Kubernetes in AWS. And so people like the fact that you're not buying some vendor-locked kind of tech. And so our team's focus is, well, Kubernetes is cool, but it brings a lot of complexity. I mean, if you're an ops person, you're going to be salivating because it's like, I have all these dials and all these controls. I can do all this kind of stuff to configure Kubernetes exactly how I want. In the PaaS world, what we want to do is let you actually run your apps on Kubernetes, but we're going to manage Kubernetes for you. Mm-hmm. And so we call that Azure Container Apps. And so the idea is you can go tell your boss, we're running on Kubernetes. We get all the benefits of Kubernetes, but you don't have to worry about maintaining Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. We're going to maintain Kubernetes for you. We're going to give you a bunch of those same PaaS features with that AAD control for your application, the ability to publish your containers. We're going to give you amazing abilities to scale your application. You can even scale. My favorite is what we call scale to idle. There's scale to zero, where we just stop the app if there's no traffic. But starting an app back up might take maybe 5 seconds. Scale to idle is even better, where we say, not much is going on, so you're just going to pay an idle charge, which can be just dollars a day.
So it keeps the memory. It keeps the memory then?
Yeah, it keeps the memory. We don't stop the application.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery. Clear Measure is also happy to be a sponsor of the video podcast, Programming with Palermo. watch, learn, and program alongside Chief Architect Jeffrey Palermo. Videos are added weekly and available on syndicated locations supporting video podcast or by visiting palermo.network. Tune in today.
But we're not charging you because there's no CPU really being used by the application. So imagine a great scenario is you've got a messaging layer in your application and it waits for messages to go into a queue. Mm-hmm. And if there's nothing in the queue, the app's technically idle.
Right.
And so you can go run a middleware in your application that does kind of nothing and says, hey, when I'm not doing anything, I'm just going to go to idle state and it's going to cost you $2 or $3 a day versus paying for a whole virtual machine running your container. And so we're going to give you the ability to scale these things all the way up, scale them all the way down to idle. So that is kind of a big thing that we're working on in the space that I'm in right now is making it easier for a developer to say, hey, we're running on Kubernetes. I don't have to manage the Kubernetes, but I still get all the features and capabilities for it. I get some cool features like scale to idle, which means I can actually run and be ready to take the next request instantaneously without a big cost basis. And so that really is kind of the next big wave that we're thinking about. And I'll say something else here is, I mentioned containers a bunch of times. We also want to make, our job is to make a developer's life easier. And so imagine you're a .NET developer today. And this is a true scenario. You're in Visual Studio and you're like, I come to you and I say, hey, Jeffrey, I need you to convert your app to a container so we can get it running in Azure. Mm-hmm. And so you go and you go right click and you try to publish and it won't let you publish to any of the container tech because your app's not been Dockerized.
Yeah.
So you go, okay. So maybe I'll go find it. I find in the tools, I right click and I say add Docker support. And then Visual Studio complains and says, oh, I can't do that. You don't have Docker for desktop installed.
Right.
Well, what's Docker for desktop? Well, Docker for desktop is this thing that lets me run Docker locally. Crud. So I have to go download that thing. When I do that, that then requires me to turn Hyper-V on, maybe WSL on, maybe reboot once or twice. Then I have to go back. Now I'm in Visual Studio. I can actually right-click and add this Docker support. It adds all these files that I'm not sure what they really are, but it seems to work. And then I can right-click and publish to Azure Container Apps or Azure App Service for containers. I hate all those steps that I just described.
Yep.
Those pain me. I think our job as people that build developer tools and developer frameworks is we want to give you the power that if you want to go modify that Docker file and if you want that Docker file, it should be there for you. Mm-hmm. But if your job is just to take your ASP.NET web app or API app and just get it into the cloud, you shouldn't have to create those things.
Right.
And so that's a focus you're going to see the .NET team do. And that's a focus that you're going to see my team who's building the tools do. We call this scenario code to cloud. How do we simplify taking your code and putting it in the cloud? And in the future, I'm not going to require you to have Docker for desktop installed. I'm not going to require you to have Hyper-V installed or WSL installed. If you want to have those things, more power to you. But I might have the ability to say, just give me your code. And inside of the cloud, I'll actually make it into a container for you automatically. And inside the cloud, I'll go put it in a container registry, which is a place that you put these things mm-hmm. for the service to pull. So I want to give you that full fidelity. If you want to build all those steps manually, go for it. If you don't want to build those steps manually, I want to take that away and say, you don't have to do those things. The same goes for, like Azure Container Apps, which the whole point of it is, if you don't want to maintain that Kubernetes and make the config files and make all your own pods and stuff like that, then don't. Let me do that for you. And we're even going to build an eject feature. So if you decide later, it's like, well, I want all those Kubernetes features. Great. We're going to have a feature that will export your container from Container Apps, and you can then run it in Azure Kubernetes Service and have that full fidelity. So, once again, we never want to lock you, but our job is to say, not to require you to know all the knobs and levers and bells and stuff, just to get your code running. That's our job, is to make getting your code running as easy as possible. And then if you want full control, we want to still give you that full control. So that's kind of the mission and the goal. And some of this even shows up in .NET 7. .NET 7, the next version of .NET that's coming out this November, it has the ability as part of the .NET build command to build a container for you.
Nice.
Without those assets and some of that stuff. So you can say, hey, make me a Docker container. And you'll see in .NET 8, you'll see that go even further. .NET 7 is still going to require things like Docker for Desktop to be installed to do those builds. But I envision a future where we don't require a bunch of dependencies to do stuff.
That's good. That's good. And Microsoft has always been really good at tooling, had a big focus on tooling. I remember when Visual Studio first included support for Git commits and Git clones. And there were some loud voices that said, oh, they should just be using command line anyway. They don't need a right-click menu to Git commit. Oh, come on. But you know what? Yeah, we do. I've been programming for 25 years. And yes, I want it. I don't want to have to type in the terminal. Yep. Do I know how to do that? Yes, I know how to do that. But I don't want to.
I'm the same way. I know those commands. I mean, because we have to learn them at some point anyways. Mm-hmm. But whether I'm in Visual Studio or even Visual Studio Code, I find the Git support in Visual Studio Code to be very, very good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll make some changes and do a commit right from inside the tool. I don't feel I have to drop to command line to go do those things. If I want to, I can. If I'm doing something more complicated, I will do it. So our goal is to make both options available and both options work in a seamless way. You know, and Git tooling, you know, you probably watched us change Git tooling inside of Visual Studio. Mm-hmm. The first version felt more like the TFS tooling that we had before. And now there's a really Git-centric tooling that I think we shipped about a year ago in RTM. And I really like that tooling as well. It's very clean, very basic, doesn't get in the way too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, tools are here to make our jobs faster and easier.
Oh, totally. And you said it with Kubernetes. Great. There's a lot of power and a lot of goodness there, but there's a huge number of developers that want maybe a portion of the capability that Kubernetes provides. They want the ability to be reliant on maybe a CPU and some memory instead of the unit of deployment being to the machine or to the VM. And just being able to say, oh, I've got a regular simple, could be complex, but a regular .NET application, let me run it as a Kubernetes container and have just a short path where I'm good with most of the defaults. Don't make me set them explicitly.
Right. We feel the same way. And, you know, once again, as I said, we drive a lot of tooling for Azure, and, you know, we feel the same way in a lot of other areas. One of the things that we just previewed right after at the Build conference in May is something I'm excited about. We call it the Azure Dev CLI. And I'll give you the scenario. And this was all done with customer development. One day we're on a call with some Python developers. Mm-hmm. And we're like, hey, take this Python API and let's get it hosted up in the cloud. And you can imagine, you know, what this entails. Oh, I need to install the Azure Dev CLI. I need to install the Azure CLI. And maybe I have to go to the portal. And so we have this tutorial, and inside the tutorial, it says, go here and click this and right click this and click this and then go to the command line and type this and type that. And, you know, just imagine sometimes I copy paste, sometimes I don't, sometimes I don't pay attention. I'm supposed to replace something, you know, in a copy paste with, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm supposed to consider that. I'm supposed to put a name there or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, that is just fraught with problems, meaning that if I mess up, you know, like in the portal, well, the docs can get stale because the portal's always changing.
Right.
And so what a screenshot looks like today, maybe 3 months down the road, those same options have moved somewhere else. And so, you know, people get into trouble that way. As I just mentioned, if you're typing things in the command line, one typo, and you could do something very different than what the doc intended you to do.
Yeah.
And so both of those things are very fraught with chances of messing up. And so we're building we call it the Azure Dev CLI. And what it is a bunch of conventions. So if you're building a sample that you put in GitHub, it can have a folder that contains the files that describe the Azure resources to make the app run. It'll have a file inside of it that describes where the variables that need to change. If I'm running locally, I want to use this connection string. If I'm running in the cloud, I want that connection string. And our first goal with the Dev CLI is to make it where any sample can be designed to easily run in Azure, where I can go and take the CLI, pull the sample code down. I can run a single command. It'll provision all the things in Azure required to make the sample run. I run another command and it will publish the app to Azure. and I run another command, it will actually take me to the screen in the portal mm-hmm. where I can monitor the actual app that I just built. And so it's not meant to be magical or anything like that. It really is basically I have a .NET or a Java or a Node or a Python app. And I just want to be able to run it in the cloud without having to have a tutorial that says run 20 command line things or go click a bunch of times in the portal. And so that's just another example of us looking at a common problem that we see people running into. In the case of the Python developers, during the call, we were just one of these things where we do an engagement where we get to watch somebody try to use the product. You know, it took people most of the call just to install the tools. They never got a chance to actually try to run the app or publish the app.
Yeah.
And the goal with the Dev CLI is it's a single exe. There is no installer. It takes, you know, 10 seconds to install in your box. You clone a repo and you're up and running in 5 or 10 minutes.
That's awesome. Cause yeah, with Azure, and this goes to the strategy, Azure has every type of developer out there. And then you've got .NET. What's the difference in the two strategies and how do you bring those together? Because for me, I've been a .NET developer since it came out. Microsoft, you know, other stuff before that. And that's, you know, there's tons of Microsoft shops. But then Azure wants to host, wants to host everything, right?
Of course. You know, the term we use for this, we say polyglot. And, you know, polyglot means that you're using a mix of technologies. And, you know, even when I was directly in the .NET team, very rarely did we find shops that were 100% .NET. They might be a .NET shop with some Java or some Python or some Node. And in many cases, you know, we all watch the tech news. When you watch the tech news, you see companies buy other companies all the time.
Yeah, of course.
So while you might be a .NET Microsoft shop, well, hey, I want this credit card processor. They've got this great tech. I'm going to buy this company. Mm-hmm. Well, they're a Java company. Yeah. Well, now you've got some Java and some .NET. And so what you find is, you know, as I said, we're 20 years into this .NET journey. Most companies have a little bit of
everything.
Of everything.
And even old stuff, old crusty stuff.
Even crusty stuff. I mean, that's one of our, you know, during the whole .NET Core journey, one of our messages was, if you have old .NET framework code and you're not changing it anymore, then leave it alone. I mean, it's not worth, you know, most of us don't have time to build our new projects, much less go try to migrate mm-hmm. old projects to newer right. frameworks. Right. And so, yeah, our job is to make sure that Azure is a great destination for any technology. I mean, we focus primarily on Java, .NET, Node, and Python. And of course, we want everything. So we support the other tech as well, obviously. But those are the biggest ones when it comes to market share at this point in time. And so we care very deeply about all of those developers. And so, you know, we're building Visual Studio Code extensions to make sure that if you are a Python developer or a Node developer, you have great support as well. In fact, in Azure Functions, which is our serverless offering in Azure, the idea behind serverless is, you know, all the apps we traditionally build running all the time. And so they're spending money all the time. In a serverless world, you write a function and it only runs when it's called. And when it's not being called, it's completely idle. We're now looking at, and even .NET struggles in this space. If you have an ASP.NET web API and you want to convert that into an Azure function, the Azure function you're going to write is going to look very different than the web API. Mm-hmm. And so we are in the process of trying to make sure that for Node, Python, and .NET developers, and we'll do Java too, that, hey, when I want to host my code as a serverless app, it looks just like the web API in .NET. You don't have to, you know, you shouldn't have to change the way your code looks or runs to do that. And so that's a motion we're just starting right now. And we're going to do Python first, followed by Node, followed by .NET, and make the programming models for Azure Functions mimic the common programming model you would use for each of those techs. And it just goes down again. As I said, our job is to make it easier to do all these things. And, you know, you shouldn't have that mismatch between these things. And so it makes the space fun is, you know, we're always innovating. The world's always changing. But I'm nice. Super excited about where we're going to be. It'd be fun to do another one of these podcasts, maybe around Build next year, mm-hmm. because we're doing another thing that we're trying to solve with some of our platform is, it always cracks me up is in Azure, we have a feature called virtual networks. Mm-hmm. And whatever you set up a virtual network because you want you know, when you're at home or in your office, you know, you got all your computers wired together into a switch, you kind of own the whole network.
Yep.
When you're in Azure, each of these things kind of exist independently out there, but customers like knowing that the things are all in the same kind of network.
Yeah.
And so they want to use a virtual network. Well, virtual networks are complicated to set up.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same tech that we're building for Azure Container Apps, we call this an Azure Container App environment. And that's kind of like the hosting thing where your containers all sit.
Mm-hmm.
Because they all sit in the same environment. They're in the same network.
Nice.
And so what if I took some of the other services that we build in DevDiv, like the Redis Cache, the Config service, and the Java Spring App service, and I run them in the same underlying tech? Well, then they're on the same network automatically without creating a VNet. And so we're going to be a lot further down that journey by build of next year. And I'd love to come back and actually talk about what we've done in this space, because there's a ton of work. By then, you know, like, you know, I mentioned containers a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're doing containers, there is no automatic patching. How do you know that your base image is out of date? How do you know that your runtime is out of date? How do you know that the packages that you're building your application with are out of date? And so that's another part of the thing we want to put in what we call the platform is, imagine being able to go to the portal or run a command line tool, and we'll tell you you're out of date.
Mm-hmm.
And even be able to give you a command to say, make me not out of date. You okay. can decide to go do it yourself, but just like in app service today where we patch the OS, well, mm-hmm. if you're using proper DevOps, I should have all the tech required to go rebuild your code for you
yep.
with a new base image.
Right.
And so it feels like it's an even better step than app service today, because now we're doing that same patching, but you can control when it happens.
Nice.
This is the area that we're investing in and experimenting in, and we're going to make a lot of progress between now and next May.
A lot going on. That's amazing. And as we close up here, .NET Conf and .NET 7, what are the big things that listeners need to put on their calendar for this fall?
Well, I think the you know, obviously .NET 7 is going to ship in early November. I don't know if we've actually released it. I think we have announced the dates for .NET Conf. I don't know them off the top of my head, but .NET Conf is our big release conference for that new version of .NET. It is not going to be an LTS. It's not a long-term support release, but you know, we're finding more developers are moving faster to .NET. You know, if you read that Stephen Toe blog post on all those performance improvements, one thing I always want to tell customers, whether it's an LTS or a non-LTS release, we support them exactly the same. There's no quality difference between an LTS and a non-LTS release. Many of our customers, especially internal customers, move right to the next version of .NET right away. I would say don't wait for .NET 8. Move to .NET 7 right away. Come to .NET Conf in November. Not only will there'll be lots of talks that explain all the new capabilities of .NET, there'll be talks from my team as well, explaining how you can use those new .NETs with all the resources that we have in Azure, mm-hmm. Like container apps and app service and functions and so on. So it's a great place to hear from the product team about the product and about some of the teams around the product as well that do stuff here. And as I said, I'm sure I'll be in some session demoing how I can use the build tools in .NET to build containers automatically and then deploy those containers that I build automatically into things like container apps and app service containers. And so it's going to be a great release, lots of perf improvements, a lot of work in making APIs easier to secure, a lot of work to make MAUI really, really RTM. The tooling for MAUI did mm-hmm. an RTM, you know, with MAUI and yep. At build. It's going to all GA this November. So should be an exciting release. And I can't wait to see the RTM build.
Fantastic. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming back on the show and sharing with us Microsoft's Azure and .NET strategy. A ton going on. So thanks for being back on the show, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.